Hello and welcome to the Neurology Nuts and Bolts podcast. This is a podcast all about constructing your career in neurology. I'm your host, Sana Sum at the Barre Neurological Institute. Today we're going to be talking to Dr. Courtney Takahashi, who's an assistant professor and director of the Neurocritical Care Fellowship at Boston University, and Dr. Caitlin Bird, who's an assistant professor in movement disorders and the neurology clerkship also at Boston University, about earning second degrees as physicians. Thank you both for joining us, and thank you for taking the time to speak with us today.
No, thank you for inviting us.
Thanks for inviting us, yes.
Of course. So, Courtney, I'd like to start with you. So you already have a master's in clinical research, and you're currently working on an MBA. Could you tell us a little bit more about your motivations for seeking additional degrees?
The first additional degree I got, I actually started when I was a PGY4 resident at Oregon Health and Science University. And they offer a program where you can really do as little or as much as you want, but if you do the entire course load, you earn a master's in clinical research. And my thought at that time was, I'm going to go on to be a researcher, I'm going to get a K award, and I need to do whatever I can to make a grant application more enticing. I have changed since then. I have regained some sanity. So I have let go of that dream. But I still ended up with the knowledge and the degree nonetheless, but that was at least the intention at that time.
And what about the MBA now?
The MBA now is, like most things in life, started off at Boston University, and I had some ideas. I still thought I was going to be a researcher at that time. And then when I really started to get into research, I was like, oh, no, this moves too slow for me. This is too tedious for me. This is not my personality. But for the first time, I started to do some administrative work, and that really spoke to me in terms of problem solving, working with people, finding practical solutions, getting input from others. And so the more I did administration, the more I liked it, and the more the idea became appealing to me of, you know, why don't I try to do more in hospital leadership? And I realized as people put things like balance sheets in front of my face and they said, well, the billing or this account doesn't balance with this account, or we have this problem. And also the managerial expertise, I thought, what kind of training could I get to address this? And then it turned into, I'll just go to a weekend seminar, to I'll just think about this, to I'm just going to commit to getting an MBA at this point. As you can see, my problems start to fester and metastasize. But I told myself, this is the last degree I'm going to get. I'm done after this point.
But that's great, because it's not something that was part of the 10-year plan. And as your career and goals have evolved, it seems like this has been a part of an evolution of that process.
I think so. I changed in ways that I didn't expect.
Caitlin, you graduated fellowship a couple of years ago, and you're currently working on a master's in science degree in health professions education. Now, is that something you planned to pursue while you were in training, or did you also kind of decide that once you became an attending and you saw different needs or a different career trajectory than you anticipated?
I'm going to say a little yes and no. So I came out of medical school, out of residency, knowing that I loved academics because I loved teaching. I loved being with medical students, residents, fellows, and I had this very naive idea of being a clinician who did teaching, and I saw myself kind of advancing on either a clerkship director or a residency director sort of pathway. But when I got into academic medicine, I quickly realized that, you know, no one pays you just to teach. Like, you need to do something scholarly with it. You need to be innovative. You need to be clever, creative, coming up with new curricula or new ways of delivering old material. And I quickly realized that I did not have those tools in my toolbox. So my impetus for doing professions education master was really to kind of gather those tools to learn how to, first of all, get a solid foundation in education theory, in kind of the new wave of education, new ways of delivering materials, and then also like how to assess and how to judge what we're doing and make sure what we're implementing is worthwhile for our students. And so that's how I got involved with the master's program.
That's that's great. I think in medicine, it's always been a bit of an apprenticeship, and we just assume that that is the only way to do education or to perpetuate sort of those pathways in education. And honestly, before this interview, I did not know that health professions education had a formal training program. Along those lines, I think you started answering this a little bit, but can you give us a brief overview of what you are learning, what the curriculum looks like? What sort of things are you learning in this program?
Yeah, so it's actually quite a wide variety. So we started with some foundational readings, some Dewey, some really old school education theories about how people learn best, learning about Montessori methods, and kind of talking about education as a whole. One of the really nice things about this program is that it's not fully isolated to people in the health professions. So I am taking some classes with kindergarten teachers. And so it's nice to see approaches to education and learning that can be applied across the spectrum of education. I actually learned a lot of cool new technology tools from them that I otherwise wouldn't have encountered, you know, through that apprenticeship model in medicine that you mentioned. So learning kind of different tools, technology tools, assessment tools, learning how to write good learning objectives and how to write learning objectives that are measurable, that have higher order Bloom's taxonomy, how to make sure our assessments fit those learning objectives, how to look at a curriculum and design in a backward fashion so that we're looking at the outcome we want and then designing our individual learning nuggets to fit into that ultimate goal as opposed to just coming up with neat individual lesson plans. So I feel like I have a much greater appreciation of kind of the educational process and the way that it has been done well in an evidence-based manner.
That's great. It sounds like your program caters to all types of educators, but then also is specifically for health professions.
Yeah. So the health professions education master itself is mostly catered towards health professionals. A lot of, you know, fellows who are on an educational track, a lot of physicians, but also we recently had a sonographer who graduated from the program. But then we have classes that are outside of the master's, some that are in the School of Education, and that's where we get that nice cross-collaboration.
That's nice. So you're able to build a program with some overlap in other areas of education. That's awesome. Courtney, for you, can you share a bit about your MBA program and how that relates to your medical work? I mean, healthcare administration seems the obvious answer, but what does that curriculum look like?
I don't want to sell myself as completely divorced from medicine. So I am actually in a health sector management. So some MBA programs will offer this focus on the health sector. So obviously I had to take that. And I will say that in all the schools that I have applied to over the years, it was the easiest, why do you want to do this? And the answer was, because I already do it. I just need to know more. So the essay wrote itself, yes. But there are lots of applications that honestly I didn't anticipate. So like any other MBA, you have to take lots of core classes. And so core classes in finance, accounting, economics, but it has given me a lot of understanding of like the theory of how to manage business and how to manage finances. But there's also a very direct practical application, because most people who graduate from the program are expected to go out and, you know, sometimes people are going to get their very first jobs after they graduate from the program. I think that understanding a lot more, especially because whether we want to face it or not, there are financial incentives, there are financial goals, even if you're in a nonprofit healthcare organization. And rather than saying, I'm a doctor and I'm going to ignore that beast, I think understanding and having at least a practical approach to it has been one of the biggest gains that I've gotten out of going to business school.
Yeah, I think a lot of times we hear about physician burnout or the changing landscape of healthcare, business has a big part of it. And I'm sure, you know, our lack of understanding or lack of training in that realm contributes to those feelings. As neurologists, most of us have fairly full plates already. We're you know, most of us, I will speak for most of us and say we are quite busy. So how have you guys managed to carve out time for another degree while having full-time jobs?
I do ICU, which the schedule lends itself to feast and famine. When I'm on call for a whole week, 24/7. And those are probably the most challenging times, but at least that's offset by there are times where I'm mostly administrative and non-clinical. And so I have a lot more control over my schedule, over meetings, over going to class. And I try to front load myself where if I know things are going to be due, I'm the only person who's emailing the professor on the first day going, "When is the absolute soonest I can turn this paper in?" And they're all going, "Who are you? Why are you asking me these questions?" Because I can't handle the pressure of both someone herniating in the ICU and, "Oh my gosh, I have to do a term paper in 5 hours." And so I feel it's forced me to get better at time management, but I think my schedule lends itself to it as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. Caitlin, you're in a more outpatient subspecialty.
I am, yes. So fortunately, my master's is catered to health professionals who are working full-time jobs. So most people are not taking my program as a full-time program. Most people are taking it part-time. The core classes are offered during evening hours. So most of my classes run from like 6 to 9 in the evening. So I'm able to go to those kind of after a full day of clinic or after a full day of teaching students. Our electives, you know, we have to get a bit more creative with those because those are generally offered through the School of Public Health or through, you know, the graduate medical sciences. And so making sure to find a class that works within my schedule. But so far, I've been able to accommodate. And then I do not plan as far ahead as Courtney. I am that person who's writing her term paper the night before it's due. So I think just making sure I have all my deadlines on my schedule and then trying to carve out time on nights or weekends to do my homework as best I can.
You touched a little bit upon this. How long is this taking you guys? So are you, Caitlin, I think you said some people do it part-time, some do it full-time. So how long are you taking with your degree?
Yeah, so I'm going to take 2 years. If all goes well, I should be graduating in May. I think that's probably the average that people kind of taking it over kind of nighttime classes while they continue to work full-time take about 2 years. There are some students who kind of force it in one. Generally, these are kind of senior medical students or fellows who have additional protected time to do the master's on top of their clinical obligations. And then we have some students who are kind of on the 3, 4, 5 year course who are taking some classes just to dabble in education, and they may or may not complete the master's. They do also offer a certificate program, which has kind of fewer overall classes that need to be taken.
That makes sense. Courtney, how did it work when you did your master's in clinical research when you were a resident?
It worked out mostly because I forced it to work out, but it also worked out because I will say that my colleagues and everyone else were incredibly supportive. So I publicize and advertise very widely that I'm doing this and I could use all the help and support. And so people were very gracious to let me sign out at odd times to make, you know, promises today to make up time later on. It was also an evening program. So you know, the expectation was that everybody was working and that helped a lot. I think the only difficulty was during residency, I was still working nights. And then even in fellowship, I still had night call. And those were the only times where I had conflicts. But most of the time, I could make it up by working in the late afternoon, trading some hours with someone, and then going in and finishing up the rest of my finishing up work, starting work late. But because I had covered earlier, hopefully people weren't too mad at me.
Now let's talk about costs, right? So have you guys been able to get your programs to fund these degrees? Are you taking them at the institution you're employed? So is it free or do you have a reduced tuition?
Yeah, so we're very fortunate at Boston University in that we have tuition remission for full-time employees and who are taking less than a full-time course load. So I have been fortunate to get the vast majority of my courses reimbursed through the university.
Same answer, tuition remission. And when I was in Oregon Health and Science has a partnership with the University of Oregon, or they did for a long time. And so they have this master's program folded in, so it's free for all faculty or residents who decide to pursue the master's.
That's really nice. Have you guys, or do you know of anyone who's been able to get their program to support time to get these degrees?
So the only person I know, the people I know who have gotten kind of time support have been more at the fellow or resident level of education, or like doing a chief residency year. And they've kind of negotiated up front and have incorporated it as part of their training program. So they get additional time away from clinical responsibilities. But as far as kind of the full-time clinicians, I haven't seen anybody get time in my program.
Yeah, I imagine that would be a bit tougher to do.
I will say though that I have seen some, education grants, training grants available, and I think that I decided to, the time span between me deciding to do this and applying was very short. And so in all fairness, I didn't give my division or really, it's not like I made a proposal and they rejected it. I mostly took the initiative and decided to do it on my own. But I do think that, my program and the division are supportive. And if I said, this is something I want to do, they might not have said yes immediately, but I think they would have really genuinely worked hard with me to find a compromise or some type of solution.
You guys have talked a little bit about how your degrees have influenced or how your career trajectories have influenced your choice in degrees or how you expect those to affect your career going forward. Do you think, and you may not be able to answer this question, that the having the full degrees and having those letters after your name are valuable? Or, for our listeners who maybe want to take, do the certificate or who want to just do a couple of courses, is there value in that? Or if you're going to do it, just do the whole degree and get the title as well?
I'll go ahead because I think even taking the courses has been a huge boost to my CV and a huge boost when I'm going up for promotion. I know for a fact that I've gotten two appointments that I don't think that I would have gotten. Been taking these courses and learning more kind of on my evenings and weekends. So I was promoted to the clerkship director just this past December. And I'm fairly convinced that, having this extra education gave me a slight leg up over the other like incredibly accomplished and talented individuals in our department who were also interested in the position. And then I all was also appointed to our Academy of Medical Educators here through the School of Medicine, where we get to teach the first and second year medical students in kind of small doctoring groups about physical exam skills, as well as case-based learning. And again, I know that the extra courses I had taken gave me a slight leg up because I had experience with the vocabulary and I knew kind of the mission of the educational program. So I think every little course that you can take can be beneficial. There's certainly a lot that I have learned about evaluation and assessment and curriculum design in each of the individual courses. And I think that it's something that you can put on a CV and you can talk about when interviewing. So I think any and all of it has been beneficial for me.
Well, I'm going to give the mom answer, and my mom is a teacher, so it's the mom teacher answer, just to clarify. And that is all education is beneficial in any circumstance. And so, but in all seriousness, the statistics for me when I was a resident was you might as well have told me a black box. They could have written it in Greek or Arabic and it would have been like, okay, I accept that. But it gave, even just taking a few courses gave me a much better background where I'm not a statistician, but at least it's not so foreign to me. And I understand why someone chose a certain statistical test or why they chose to design their study in a very specific way. And the same thing with the MBA, where even if you only took the introductory accounting courses, understanding that and putting it into the context, so when someone shoves a spreadsheet or a balance sheet in front of my face, I don't feel like I'm so lost. But obviously it builds on itself. The more you know, the more helpful it becomes.
What advice do you have, or do you have for our listeners who are thinking about getting another degree? Last words of wisdom.
You know, like Courtney was saying, I think all education is good education. So if you are curious, if you want to learn more about something, if you feel like you have a gap in your knowledge in what you're able to offer either your patients or your students, I would say go for it. Like, knowledge is power. Like, taking that opportunity to take a little time for yourself, go back to the classroom. It's been a lot of fun for me. So I would encourage people to explore it as an option. I also think that a lot of institutions have remission platforms that you just don't know about. And so I would say looking into that, seeing what's available, seeing what sort of education grants are out there, I think that it can be something that's done in a sustainable fashion.
Yeah, I completely agree with Caitlin. The only thing I would add is that, at least for the MBA, it is a huge time commitment. I'll probably end up doing this, giving up at least two or three nights of my week for 3 hours at a time for 2.5 years. And so I think it's a great thing to do, but I think thinking ahead of, I know what I want to do once I'm at the end of this road, and having it be part of your larger plan, because I certainly think that the MCR was good for my general background, but it was a lot of time invested that I use peripherally, but probably not day to day. And I think that this second degree had more thought and planning put into it than the first one did.
Thank you both for sharing your experiences and insight.
Our pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
The Neurology Nuts and Bolts podcast was created and produced by Sarah Schaefer. It is not recorded as an official podcast of any institution or organization. The podcast is unfunded. Opinions are those of the individual participants. Music by Audrey Nath. Artwork by Shivani Ghoshal. Want more content like this? Be sure to subscribe to the Neurology Nuts and Bolts podcast wherever you get your podcasts to hear more about constructing your career in neurology. Follow us on Twitter at NeuroBolts and on Facebook at Neurology Nuts and Bolts to stay up to date on new content and give us feedback on what you want to hear and tell your friends. Thanks for joining us. Thank you.